Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Today we have on Frank Gearhart.
Yes.
And he is currently the president of the local chapter of the Information System Security Administration. So, currently, you said, right?
Actually, we just had an election, so I'm now a past president as of January 1st.
Okay. So, it's the elections are pretty quick after that. They change forever.
Yes.
There's
yes,
not a changed. Big... I thought, okay.
Very low key.
Low key. Okay. But, really plugged in the Colorado area, and we were just talking before that we started recording here about all the things that are going on. It's exciting. It's an exciting time in Colorado Springs.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So give me a background yourself, all the things you're involved with, other than we know about ISSA, which I just talked about.
Well, as you said, I'm a recent past president of the local ISSA chapter. Very proud of our chapter. We have approximately 470 members. We're currently the second largest chapter in the world, actually, of ISSA. The number one chapter is in Denver, and they're only about 30 ahead of us, so we're actually planning to surpass them sometime this year.
So everybody go out and join
yes,
ISSA.
Please come join our chapter.
So we can say we're the biggest in the country.
ISSA.org
right?
In the world, you know, yes. In the world, actually. ISSA International has about 11,000 members worldwide. Mm-hmm. So roughly 10% of the entire worldwide membership is here in the Front Range. That should give
Did
you some idea of just how strong.
Did it start here in the Front Range? Is that why?
I don't think so, to be honest. I know their headquarters is in Reston, Virginia. So I believe that's actually where they started. And while they have some very large chapters in that area, obviously the D.C. area, there's a lot of work there. To a lot of people, it is a surprise just how strong cybersecurity is in the Front Range and the Colorado Springs region. Given the number of the population we have here and looking at everything, it is my opinion we probably have the highest concentration of cybersecurity expertise anywhere in this country and maybe even in the world, to be perfectly honest. But we've been very quiet. You know, lately,
well, cybersecurity is a quiet study, right?
It is.
You have really the keys to everybody's kingdom. You're not going to go out and brag about it.
You
right?
don't want to bring attention to yourself. Absolutely, that's one thing about the nature of the industry. We tend not to brag or want high visibility, as you pointed out. However, given that cybersecurity is now on everyone's radar, governments, federal, state, local businesses, individuals, people are starting to realize just how pervasive it is. And just how important. In fact, you almost might want to get rid of the word cybersecurity and just talk about security. And cyber is a part of that.
You know, I agree with that. Why, though, is cybersecurity so big right now when a couple of years ago, whispered? You know, why is it so big?
Well, I think because now it's starting to impact people. For example, when the OPM hack happened, with all the clearances and everything. I was personally involved in that. I had my clearance getting renewed
Likewise.
At the same time. And so I got the little letter from OPM, so they gave me my 3 years of whatever. When you look at Target, that was a big one, obviously, because that got a lot of people's attention. The recent Yahoo ones, actually both the Yahoo ones, the half billion about a year ago, now the 1 billion that just came out a few weeks ago.
Do you think it's because of public hacks? I mean, literally, both of us have been in the industry for years. Mm-hmm. We know of big, high-profile hacks 10 years ago.
Right.
Why is it so big now?
I'm not really sure, except I think there's just more and more of them, and they're getting more recognized and more noticed and more advertised, if you want, by the media, so people are aware. Obviously, the ones with the DNC, WikiLeaks, obviously, was a big one.
So you think maybe it's awareness? We got the
I think it's awareness.
Edward Snowden, post-Snowden era where everybody's aware and looking at it now.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
When was it that the law was passed that required companies to publicize when they had a breach? That was only a couple of years ago.
It was fairly recently, and I think it also varies too by state. If you're talking about the federal one, right, but each state has their own rules as well. The issues there, obviously, especially if you're a company that has multiple locations in different states, which rules do you go by? And even those rules allow the company or the organization to time to investigate and determine, did a breach occur, and did that breach rise to the level to where it requires, you know, reporting. So just because something happened doesn't mean they immediately have to report it. If it's a very small breach, they may not have to, but they're allowed time to investigate and look for it. And you'll also notice, too, a lot of the bigger ones, like the Target ones, et cetera, they didn't necessarily happen from the main company. These people came in from outside through a third-party vendor, through someone who's smaller.
Maybe but, you know, the average the person, though, that's getting involved and aware of cyber and in the news, you know, doesn't really pay attention to how it happened.
True.
They just hear the details about it.
Yes.
So maybe it is that it's affecting average people more now. When it was, you know, previous years, it might have been just a big company that lost something, or, you know, we all still get happy when there's a hack on the Amazon Fire Stick, right? Because we get free service.
So, true, yes.
So that seemed to be, you know, as far as a population concern with cyber, oh, yeah, that's just a funny thing. Ha, ha, ha. Now we all get free service. Or back when they had the cards that you could put in your DirecTV that gave you free whatever paid channels and everything. But now that it's individual people's information that's going everywhere, well, there seems to be a little concern.
Absolutely. And don't forget, too, if you look at anyone's wallet or purse, take a look at the credit cards they've been getting lately. You know, the banks have been sending out, oh, here's a new credit card with this chip in it. You know, it's more secure. So now every time they pull out that credit card, that's a visual reminder that, oh, there's security now. So they get reminded that, oh, do I swipe it or do I slide it in?
Yeah.
You know, that, well, I'm sliding it in. Why? Well, it's more secure. So now it's now becoming an everyday thing. Every time they go to the grocery store, anytime they use their credit card, they've got that little chip. And that's only because of security.
We're finally getting to the point where it's an everyday thing. I think that's
becoming,
what it is.
It's becoming, I think, expected. People are now thinking security. You know, the kids are getting classes in school, how to be safe online. You know, parents are being told how to teach your children to be safe online.
So we're getting there. One of my guests said that cybersecurity needs to be basically become like the Green Act became when we started cleaning up the environment in the country, and that there's been some drastic changes in that area. Remember when I was a kid, we'd go fishing in the Delaware Bay and you didn't eat anything out of there. Now it's relatively clean. I mean, all kinds of wildlife is back in those areas and everything, but that's years of that movement of everybody in society becoming involved. And that's what, you know, they said is cybersecurity is the existential question of our age that we need to answer. That was Rebecca Chopp from Denver, the Chancellor of Denver University, and said, you know, they said that we need to treat it at an education level, at a society level, like we did that green movement, getting everybody involved and everybody knows their part, because it's a socio-technological solution that we have to answer.
I'm going to have to steal her quote. I like that. About being the and you're right, we can't go backwards. We're not going to get rid of computers. We're not going to get rid of the internet, or in fact, look at the Internet of Things, how much more we're making. In fact, I think that's probably the next thing now, that talking about how it affects every day, you know, when you're, you know, Amazon Echo and, you know, the Nest ones, and now the GE is now creating appliances that talk to your Amazon Echo that now can be controlled through voice, et cetera. We have to be more concerned. And now I think what consumers need to do now is start asking these companies, yeah, you gave me this really nice tool here. how do you secure it? What kind of encryption do you use? They don't have to necessarily know the details about, but they should know something like, well, if they say we're using AES 256, okay, that's good. If they say, well, we're using something that we built ourselves, run away.
Yeah. I, having been involved with a lot of the development of those products, I mean, they take 2 to 3 years before they hit the market when there's something that's designed with, you know, communication with your oven, you know, all those micro-controlled things, they didn't just start last year. So back when they started, we weren't in this thinking about cybersecurity.
There is that, there is that,
so
that drag there.
So you're not going to find that they have security for the most part. You're going to find that they're wide open. And so it's not a matter of, oh, well, I won't buy that product. It's a matter of, what are we going to do when we have to look 2 years out, three years out to get security in a product? Do we not buy that product as a consumer because of that? Or do we say, yeah, we'll take the risk?
Well, it's a tough call. As you said, the consumer doesn't know or just really should know all the technical details. And a lot of times they can't find them out anyway. Even if you call the vendor, you know, the people you talk to, just you're not going to be able to get to the people who can give you the answers. Mm-hmm. So you either have to, like what I do is I depend on other places, on third parties that, you know, will go out and review these and will actually take these things apart and can have access and see, yeah, we looked at this tool or we looked at this device and it turns out it uses this type of encryption or it doesn't use any, et cetera, you know. So I have to depend on that just like, you know, anyone else does. So really I think it comes down to, like it does with anything else, do your homework on any product, you know, take a look at, but at least you're thinking about, is this secure? You might decide, yeah, I want it and I'm not really that concerned with what it does.
Yeah, we don't care who knows what time I make toast and when my oven's on.
Exactly.
You know, we might care after we get a couple people's house burned down from somebody turning it on when they're not around. But right now, you know, it's a neat little gadget that we'll pick up.
Exactly. I don't think someone is going to come after me to make sure my house is really cold when I get home at night.
That's true. You have to be a target. You have to be at a certain level, right?
I'm not. I'm probably not a target. No one's going to come after me.
But you know, you know what is the target? If somebody's tapped into your oven and knows your oven hasn't been on in a week, and you use it every day when you're home, it'll rob you blind, right?
Well, that's a possibility. Absolutely. There's that that amount of data that's out there that you don't even think about. That's a use of data that you think, well, who cares? Oh, wait, they can use it this way.
Yeah, and I wanted to point that out because even though we think all these little things are harmless, they show our trends and patterns.
Right.
So the classic passerby.
The metadata that we've had lots of, you know, talking about with Apple and some of the other issues with law enforcement, you know, is metadata actually maybe more dangerous or of more value than the data you actually have? Is it less important that you and I spoke or what we actually said? You know, if they can look at the patterns, you know, of our conversations.
Or how often we spoke.
Exactly.
And where were we at when we spoke?
Yes, exactly. Location data is another big one most people don't think about. They don't realize just how much they broadcast where they are all the time, or actually their devices do.
Yeah, so definitely. So, ISSA.
ISSA.
We kind of got on a tangent, but I loved it. ISSA, tell me about what they're doing and what you're seeing in the growth of jobs we were talking about before this, that you've seen so many companies come in. Talk about that.
Well, like I said, as our chapter, we have about 470 members right now, and they come from pretty much all walks. We have a lot of old gray-haired guys like myself. We're getting a lot of younger students coming in, which is great. We're getting a little more diversity, which is
so
also
Cindy,
a very good thing.
The last president talked about you were making an effort to get younger people. How's that panned out?
It's working out quite well. We have a mentor program that Melissa Asher is running as part of our chapter. It has gotten so well. She actually needs about 15 more mentors. She's having to turn away students and people who want to get into the field, saying, I don't have enough mentors for you. So that's one thing we're pushing, not just for our chapter members to come out and become mentors, but also anybody can do it. Really, it's just a matter of letting these people know coming in, you know, well, where should I start? What should I do? You know, it's such a huge field. What do I want to specialize in? Well, try a little bit of everything, you know, ask questions. She's put together a very, very good mentor program where the mentors and the mentees meet, you know, roughly about once a month or so, and then they swap out. So the mentees get a chance to talk to another mentor,
so
get a different viewpoint on things. Absolutely. It's great. The mentors love it. I was a mentor for a while and had a really, really good time. I was talking to a gentleman. He actually was a software tester. He mm-hmm. loved doing software testing, but he saw that field kind of going away a little bit, and he wanted to move into cyber. He's got a great background for becoming a pen tester, mm-hmm. you know, penetration tester. He loves that, but his problem right now is breaking into the field.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
Mm-hmm. You know, penetration tester. He loves that, but his problem right now is breaking into the field. You know, for pen testing especially, it's a very unique mindset that you have to kind of have to have, and I think he's got it, but he's slowly working his way into it. So as far as a mentor, it's the advantage of saying, well, you know what, let me have you talk to these people. You know, have you talked to this company? You know, give me your resume, I'll ship it out there. You know, maybe you should attend this. Have you thought about this particular type of certification? You know, to go on. Maybe we need to just tweak your resume a little bit. Maybe you've actually done this stuff. You just don't know you've done it. And what you really need is just tweak your resume to emphasize the security aspects. If you're a network engineer and you've done networks, say, well, I just do networks. Well, wait a second. Have you done access control list on a router? Well, yeah, of course. Have you ever configured a firewall? Well, sure, you have to. That's cybersecurity. Put it out there.
So maybe helping people come in to say, how can I tailor my resume to point out what I have done that's cyber? Because I don't even know what I've done that's cyber.
And that's a problem I had too, actually. I had to go and get an expert, a resume writer professional who looked at mine and said, okay, here's how we need to tweak it. And I was kind of shocked at first. It's like, are you sure about this? He says, no, trust me. This is, you know, you're not lying. You're not, you know, making something look bigger than it is. You're just emphasizing the things you've already done, putting them in a different view. And it worked, to be perfectly honest. It's how I got what I have, where I am now. So
is that something that the mentor program is helping with?
It depends on the mentor, and exactly, to be honest, it depends on what the mentee particularly needs. If you've got someone who's a college student, you know, or just getting in the field, they won't have a whole lot that to do. Mm-hmm. But there's still ways you can emphasize that. You know, the fact that they are an ISSA member. For example, we have student memberships, which are lower cost. But also, we are one of two chapters in the world that are doing what's called a freemium membership, where we pay for the students' membership. They pay nothing, you know, and depending on the certain...
Well, that probably helped in getting younger people.
It does. It has helped a great deal. We have about 50 freemium members now. So roughly almost over 10% of our membership are freemiums. Okay. Then we've got about another 20.
Is that something we can offer at university? To the students?
By all means, definitely, yes.
We'd love to have you guys come in and maybe dress some of our classes.
We are trying to grow that. In fact, like I said, we are a beta test right now, us and I think chapter in Baltimore. But we are trying very hard to get the international ISSA to adopt this as a standard because we think it's a great way to bring students in. You know, they don't have a lot of money, et cetera, but you know, they can go to our meetings.
They actually did that back in like 2001, 2002, I was a member of ISSA as a student then.
Right.
And I didn't have to pay anything then. So I know they've had that model before.
Well, we were doing it, but we were doing that just as a chapter, just internally.
Gotcha.
We've since then have gone to the international board and said, we want to test this as a beta that maybe you can do. So we've been doing this for, I think, a couple of years now with the auspices of ISSA International, monitoring it, looking at it, and success has been excellent. So we and Baltimore are pushing very hard to get ISSA International to make this something that they can provide worldwide.
So something I hear all the time, I have students lining up my door asking, how can I get a security clearance to be able to, because so many of the jobs they're seeing are government, especially in this area. These companies touch some kind of government contracting. Mm-hmm. So they require them to be cleared. And they're not looking at the students who are not cleared because, you know, it takes so long and so much money for investment from a company.
It does.
How can we get over that hurdle? Any suggestions?
Unfortunately, I don't, because that's not something that the government does. You can't go out and get your own security clearance. Unfortunately, you can't even pay for your own.
Could an organization like ISSA help we get sponsor clearances? Is that something you looked into?
Unfortunately, no. That it has to be by an employer that has a direct need
direct
for
contract,
it.
Direct contract.
Yeah.
That is something, it seems like that's something that needs to be addressed from the government level or
something. It is a sticking point in this area, and it does take now a long time. I just recently got my TS renewed, my top secret clearance renewed, and it took a little bit over a year. And I already had a clearance. This is just to get it renewed. So you're right, it is taking a huge amount of time. Unfortunately, there's nothing that we can do about that as an organization. You're right, that is a government thing. More and more companies, however, are now recognizing that while the DoD is a great market, it's getting somewhat saturated. And, you know, we, of course, like
DoD. So you think in the future there's going to be less need for
that? I think most companies now, a lot of ones that provide these services are now looking at going to commercial. Going to smaller mom and pop companies that can't afford full time cyber, but still need to have cyber things. So kind of a virtual CISO or chief of security, virtual IT departments, that kind of thing. Those require clearances, but they do require obviously the same kind of knowledge, et cetera. Yeah. You're right. If you're going to work around here, unfortunately, sometime you're probably going to end up with the clearance. But if you've got the capability,
I've seen that be a big tieback, especially for a lot of the students that are coming out of the Colorado Tech where I work. That they are continuously coming to me saying, how can I get a job that doesn't require a clearance? And it is seems to be a, you either have it or you don't, you're either in or out, and there's not much way to cross that barrier.
Unfortunately, you're right. And I don't know of a good answer for that one because that's not something that as an organization, ISSA can do anything about. That's something the DoD and the government, they're the ones who set the rules on that, and everybody else just kind of.
So maybe they're listening, and somebody has some influence there, because it's a big problem with that younger generation.
And it's also a problem with the DoD and the others because they need qualified people, and they need them fast. So you're right. If this is a roadblock for them, they'll probably find a way to get to work around it. I certainly hope so because there are a lot of incredibly smart people out there that want to get into this field, and we need them. We absolutely do.
But cyber doesn't all need. I don't want to scare everybody to say don't get into cyber if you don't have the clearance, because you were talking about all the companies and jobs that you've seen moving in. Give us some idea of what you're seeing.
Well, for example, I don't work with them, but I do know of them. Route 9B, for example, is if you've been tracking it, they have been rated as the number one cybersecurity company in the country out of the top 500, I think, for the past four years.
They've been growing, hiring people here locally?
They have been growing. They are extremely picky. But a lot of their customers are not necessarily DoD. They do have some DoD contracts, but they also have some non-ones. There's a company here in town called SecureSED that trains people to do that. But a lot of companies now are saying, you know what, it's really tough to fight in the DoD when you're going up against Northrop Grumman, Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, the really big players. There's a whole area out here that may be a market that we can start getting into that, as we talked about earlier, where security is becoming more aware in everyone's lives. The mom and pop muffin shop may not think they have anything to worry about if they're not a target, but they probably still need somebody to check their Wi-Fi, to make sure that the routers are up to date and take a look at it, make sure they're, they can't afford, a big company to do it or full time, but they might be forced someone to come in once a week or to, remotely check in to that sort of thing.
Yeah, I've had some people on to talk about the same thing that offer services in there.
Yes.
So I see that those are coming up and, those different areas of offerings. You work for the government, right?
I work as a contractor. Correct, yes.
Tell us a little bit about what you can say about that, because that was interesting with your company and what you're working on there.
Well, I work for a company called Colsa Corporation. They're headquartered out of Huntsville, Alabama, and they do have an office here in Colorado Springs, as well as Florida and a few other places. We are primarily, in fact, completely a DoD contractor. I'm on a contract at the Missile Defense Agency out at Schriever Air Force Base, and I get to work with the really smart people that actually do the hands-on keyboard work of defending the data.
And he says that as if he's not one.
No, I used to be on the keyboard. Now I get to go to meetings quite a bit. But that's something, too, that we need that is, I think, also that we need in cybersecurity. But very briefly, really, what we do is we maintain the network that the Missile Defense Agency uses. And it's no secret that our job is ballistic missile defense. The MDA helps develop the technologies that are used to build the missiles, that shoot down other missiles, the old hitting a bullet with a bullet thing. We don't actually build them. We don't actually run them. We help develop the technology that they, other people and other companies use to do that. So part of what my group does is we defend, we protect that data.
Yeah.
Quite simply.
And there's a lot of that type of work going on here, as well as, like you said, the commercial is just expanding everywhere. And there's some other really good companies that I've run into. Main Nerve, I've heard of them. Also, very much like Route 9B, has some great need, but entirely in the commercial sector. So they focus almost entirely on commercial. And some other ones around here that, you know, not coming to mind right off the bat, but is there any, I know a couple weeks ago, ISS, the company, had announced that they're going to be hiring a lot here.
Yes.
So we're looking to get their CEO in here to talk as well.
Great.
And they merged with the, I forget the other company, three companies. But there's a lot of jobs coming in there as well. So a lot of exciting things going on here.
Absolutely. I think remember when Accuvant and FireEye merged about a year ago and became Optiv, another very, very well-known company that's headquartered here in the Front Range. Once again, you know, you look at them individually and think, okay, one company. You start putting them together and you realize just what a sleeping giant we have here. You know, and I think this giant is starting to wake up. So, I mean, given the Colorado Springs area, I mean, the incredible, you know, quality of life that we have here, a very good cost of living compared to most of the country. You know, I'd much rather live here than D.C., you know.
It's true. I enjoy it here.
You know,
I've been in D.C. enough, too, and I know the difference there.
We have a well-educated workforce. You know, we're getting better. We have a very clean environment. Yeah, if you're in cybersecurity and you're not in Colorado Springs, come on down.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, your students coming, they're coming up. I think there's a lot of a benefit there because the way I see it, you know, let's say you're an artist. You know, what is it that's your kind of, let's say, business? You know, what it is about you that is unique that you want to protect? Maybe it's your art. Maybe it's your designs. You may not think of them as data that needs to be protected, but yeah, it does, because what if you have a great painting or a great picture and suddenly it shows up all over the world and it's, you know, knockoffs are being, you know, you can buy it for $2.99. What happened to you? How can you make money off of, you know, your work and your effort? That's data that you need to protect. You can't afford a full-time person, but maybe, you know, if you go to a, you know, do it on a cloud or something, you want to know enough to ask what kind of questions. Where should I go? Should I put it on Amazon Cloud? Should I put it on Microsoft? You know, or Joe's, you know, garage and cloud service down the street? You know, which one do I want to pick? I should know what questions to ask.
Well, you know what? A lot of times I've run into those Joe's cloud service down the street that have more of a focus on cybersecurity and securing their content than Amazon Web Services.
And they may be more responsive to the customer as well.
Exactly.
So yeah, don't knock them out by any means because you're
low. That's a big thing about cybersecurity. You can't just say, I'm going to go with the biggest person and, you know, bigger's better because everybody knows that everybody goes to them, everybody knows them, they must be secure. That's what we've been doing for years as consumers. And that is not the case.
No, cybersecurity is one area where you don't necessarily do that. You do have to know what questions to ask.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what questions to ask, there are lots of people around here that can do that. One of the things with ISSA, as I said, we have about 470 members. They run the gamut from SCADA systems, you know, that take care of water and power to, you know, servers, networking, and everything. And even though we all work for different companies, we might work for governments, we might work for contractors, at our meetings, everybody takes their hat off. So if you have a question or something, or if you haven't seen, if you're, you know, an expert or something and you've got a problem or an issue, you come to our meeting and say, hey, I've got this issue going on. Chances are good someone there has seen it before, and they are generally more than happy to share what knowledge they have or to help out as much as they can. Or if you say, you know what, I'm looking for a penetration tester, or, hey, I'm interested in penetration testing. Oh, well, go talk to Steve over there. Steve runs a penetration testing company. Go talk to Susie. You know, she's done it before. You know, she's been in it for 20 years. Go talk to her.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that we do. Our chapter is really built on the idea of what can we do for the members. So not only do we have our, you know, meetings that we have, you know, several times, actually twice a month now. We're having a lunch and a dinner meeting once each month. We also have, of course, our conferences that we do, a two-day conference in August, which is extremely well attended. We had over 500 members, or not 500 people attend last year. We get speakers from around the country.
Yeah. So yeah, give us kind of. I wanted to wrap things up here.
Sure.
We're getting close to that 30 minutes that people quit listening if I get too long. But gonna give us a rundown of what you have going on at ISSA over the year, how people can get involved, and what they when you know where you meet and everything.
Absolutely. We actually meet in various locations because a lot of our members are spread around the area. Mm-hmm. We try to find locations for each month to kind of, so that way not everybody, you know, has to go to one place. If you live mm-hmm. up north, you know, it might be a bit of a problem to drive south, for example. So that varies a little bit. We do put that out there as part of our invitation where it's going to be. We generally have two meetings a month. We have a lunch meeting, and then we'll have a dinner meeting usually the next day. Mm-hmm. So that way, if you can't make one, you can make the other. The subject matter of the speaker is going to be the same usually at both of them. Mm-hmm. We also have conferences that we put on. We have a conference coming up at the end of March. It's called Cybersecurity Focus Day. We'll do that, I think, at UCCS. I believe that's March 30th. Mm-hmm. We also have our big one is our two-day conference.
And the one we'll have here, which is yes. looking at late May right now.
Late May, we're looking at one having here at CTU, absolutely. And just as you know, CTU and ISSA here, we've had a long history. Well over 18 years, I think, going back of getting superb support from you. So mm-hmm. if I know you've heard it before, but I'll say it right now, we really appreciate everything you do for us in terms of helping us out. Because one of the things we do is once a year, we will do a CISSP review seminar, which we do mm-hmm. across 10 Saturdays. I'm sorry. No, 8 Saturdays now. We're doing it across. No, we do 10. We went from 10 to 10. We do across 10 Saturdays during the summertime for people who are going for that particular certification, which is a high-level cybersecurity certification to allow them to review before they take the test. Mm-hmm. We also do review sessions for Security Plus, which is a more entry-level basic certification. We do that about two or three times a year. They're all hosted by you here. You give us a great facility here. Generally, they're very well done. We have maybe 20 to 25 people at each one of them. I've had a chance to teach at them. It's a lot of fun. If you have CEs you need to get, do that. Mm-hmm. But like I said, we do have our two-day conference in August. This year it's going to be August 30th and 31st. We have it at the DoubleTree. We also have one-day cybersecurity focus seminars at Fort Carson and also at Peterson Air Force Base. And mm-hmm. then, as you said, the one UCS and the one we're going to work with you here at the end in late May.
Yeah.
And then, of course, our meetings once a month as well.
Once a month. And so if somebody wanted to get signed up, ISSA.org, right?
Yes, go to ISSA.org. That's the international one. And when you join up there, you will be allowed to select your main chapter mm-hmm. and just pick Colorado Springs as your chapter. Currently, it's $125 for the 1 year for everything. But just to let you know, when you go to the meetings, the food is free. And you get two CEs for every meeting you go to. So if you go to the meetings once a month, you get 24 CEs. You can keep the certifications current. You don't have to go back and take that test again.
So that's a big thing with the community like ISSA is,
yes.
you know, all these certifications that us security people have to hold.
Yes.
We have to have so many continued education credits a year. And basically, ISSA fulfills the need for
yes.
all those.
We do. Every time you go to a meeting, you get a little piece of paper that says you attended that meeting. If you ever get audited for any reason, we will back you up and say, yes, we had kept a role. That person attended. They definitely deserve it. Our two-day conference, you get 14 CEs for that, mm-hmm. As well as, of course, any of the other ones. There's lots of ways to get CEs. You know, we will help you out with that. We also give our members opportunities to speak. As well, which is a great way for them to give back to the community as well as get even additional CEs for preparing for the speech.
All right. Well, thanks for joining today, Frank.
My pleasure.
We got all that out, but it's been a pleasure.
It has been. Thank you very much.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.